Awesome. Hi guys. Welcome. Welcome to Recovery Jam. Welcome to the new people. The people who are not so new but just decided to introduce themselves and the people who've been here before. So I'm really happy that you've decided to join us on Recovery Jam. And tonight we're going to talk about steps 10 and 11 into action. And just to, a little background about me. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I've been recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I love the Big Book. I love everything about Overeaters Anonymous, these 12 steps, and sharing the message. And before I, anytime before I'm going to speak, I really try to get quiet and invite God in and think like, okay, just let my words be the words that God wants me to say so that they can land on the ears that He wants to hear the message. And hopefully, I can present it in a way that someone can hear it who needs to hear it. So, with that said, I'm going to talk about into action steps 10 and 11. It's on page 84 in the Big Book. It says, "This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So we've entered this new world, and it's the world of the spirit." And I love, that the world of the spirit has, I think, a different set of rules and a different set of ways that we operate, and I usually what people find most amazing is they ask questions like, "I don't know how I'm going to have time to do everything. There is so much to do in recovery. How do you possibly have time to do this?" And what I say is, in the world of the spirit, time is different. That's the only thing I can explain. I think before in my life, time was like a very, it had a set amount and it was like a pie. And you cut it up. And if you took out this piece and used it for that, there was less left. And I have to say that in the world of the spirit, when I'm utilizing my time, hopefully to do what I believe God would have me do, it feels more like love. And when you have love, you can't divide it up and have less. It actually grows. And sometimes I'm amazed at what I can get done in the course of the day when my mind is set on doing the things not so much that I want done, but when I really seek God's will and try to fit myself into using my time according to God. So that's what it means to enter the world of the spirit for me. And now I'm going to find out in that world, I've got a function, and it's to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, right? Remember that from our inventory. We're going to continue to be watching for those things. When these crop up, we ask God to remove them at once. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. And then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. So this tells me, all right, I'm going to enter this world of the spirit where time has different understanding and life has different understanding. But just because I've entered this world, I'm not a spirit. I'm not a saint. I'm not perfect, and I'm gonna mess up. I'm gonna make mistakes. I get selfish, right? Which basically is wanting things to go according to what's in my best interest. That's what it means to be selfish. Or actually what I believe is in my best interest, because I don't even know what's in my best interest. I just think I do. I may even be dishonest, which for me, which really for all of us means that we're not trusting God with the outcome. When we're dishonest, we're saying, "I don't want you in charge of the outcome, God. I've got an outcome and I'm going to manipulate the truth to force my will, to force my outcome. I get resentful, basically irritated when life doesn't follow my little plans. I get afraid. And again, that's not trusting God's plan. So here I'm told, what am I going to do? What do I do when this happens? I'm going to bring it to God. I'm going to talk with another person, make amends if I've hurt someone, and then help someone. It's like a recipe. Go to God, share it with another, clean it up, and then help someone, right? And we just repeat that over and over and over again. And, sometimes people say, well, do I really have to bring it to another person? And, you know, there's no like yes or no definitive answer. I'll just tell you for myself that I need to have a very close, intimate relationship with humility. You know, I can get really like full of myself and think that everything I say and everything I believe and everything I see is true. And when I mess up, there's a part of me that wants to hide it. I don't want to let anybody know. And that will kill me, right? That will kill me. So I need to have a very intimate relationship with humility. And nothing so much as guarantees my humility as sharing my hot mess with other people, right? Like here, take a look. This is the mess of me. And we also find out in step 4 and 5 that a solitary self-appraisal was insufficient. And that continues to be the truth for me. I cannot appraise my situations on my own. I have to let another set of eyes in there. And so the last line of what that says, love and tolerance of others is our code. I love that. That's like my favorite. I always say, I'm going to get a tattoo someday and it's going to say it right there. Love and tolerance is my code. I just think it's beautiful. And I will get that tattoo because my daughter's in apprenticeship to be a tattooist. Not my plan, her plan. And I'm going to get that tattoo right here. So for me, I love that. It's my code. It's my standard operating procedure. Like a business, every business has a mission statement. That's my mission statement. If I want to live in the world of the spirit, that's the statement. That's what I've got to live by, this particular code. And I say, you know, like part of my understanding is I'm a distinct entity. And being a distinct entity, being different, means this is my code. And if you notice, my code isn't fairness. It's not justice. It's not right versus wrong. You know, it's love and it's tolerance. And furthermore, tolerance doesn't just mean that I'm gonna have to tolerate people, right? Like, ugh, I have to tolerate them, like I have to stomach them, you know, as if other people are something that I just have to tolerate, as if I'm superior, and that I have to somehow suffer through our exchanges together, you know? Tolerance really, for me, means just like people develop a tolerance to certain drugs or to certain, you know, substances. It means that diminished sensitivity. Basically, I got to get a thicker skin to not be so damn sensitive. And really, because sensitivity is self-centeredness. It's seeing the whole world through the filter of how it's affecting poor me. But if I get tolerance, my skin's a little thicker. And I can pray for that. I can ask for that, you know. What I pray for is not that my circumstances change to suit me, but I ask God to diminish my sensitivity to the discomfort I feel when things don't go according to my plans and designs. And that's very different from how I used to pray. I used to pray telling God my plan and my design, and then I would curse God, say he didn't exist because he didn't make my plans and designs happen, right? And actually what I ask for now is, no, let me feel acceptance for your plans and designs. Let me have an understanding and tolerance for what it is that you want for me. Page 84 continues and says, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. So I do not fight, right? No fighting. If there's a tug of war going on, my role is to put down the rope. That's what I have to do. I cannot struggle, right? What is fighting? Struggle, manage, maneuver, engage in battle, quarrel, or argue. All of that I have to put aside. Remember that in step four, we were told to avoid arguing and fault finding like the plague. And we all have an understanding of how we avoid a plague today, right? It has real meaning for us. The beauty of step 10 is not just that I have to avoid that, it's that my heart's desire is to avoid it. I don't want to fight anymore. I don't want to fight for my way. And I certainly don't want to fight the desire to eat, right? That's like really the big promise of step 10. In step 10, I'm promised I won't have to. I'm not going to have to fight food anymore. And why is that? Well, it says, for by this time, sanity will have returned. So it's insane for me to think I'm going to engage in battle with the food, because I know already I can't win, right? So I don't want to fight with the food. I need it to be removed from me. We'll seldom be interested in liquor. Seldom, seldom. Not 100% all the time, seldom. I'm not interested. I have to tell you, for me, I'm not interested in eating those foods that once owned me. Really not. They don't look good to me. They've lost. They don't look like anything I want to eat. In fact, a lot of them look pretty unappetizing. They don't smell good to me anymore. They don't resemble anything good to me anymore. Actually, the thought of them kind of nauseates me. And that was done to me. That's what happens when these steps are taken, because it's not, I'm not like whistling in the dark saying, I don't want it, I don't want it, I don't want it. I actually don't want it, you know? When I was told in step one that only an act of providence, right? Step one tells me that only an act of providence can remove the obsession for destructive eating. This is what they were referring to, that this act of providence, which is the protective care of God, that's what it means, providence. Very rarely we may want to eat, but it's not so overwhelming, right? If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. So at that point, and we remembered earlier in the steps that how was it that I could not keep my hand from touching the hot stove. But now, right, all these pages later, when there's something hot, I recoil, I pull away, right? And we'll see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us. So this is a gift. This is given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. So this is a miracle. When we say that the age of miracles is still among us, right? That we believe in miracles. If you've been owned by the food, like I've been owned by the food, this is what it means to have a miracle, to have God remove the desire. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. So it's like I've been taken, we just get taken, and we're put in this position where we're neutral, where it just doesn't look like anything, no big reaction one way or the other, and we feel safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That's our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So when I say, like, I don't have to swear it off, the problem has been removed, it doesn't exist for us, it means that, like, if I'm going to a place and all those old binge foods are around me. I am not saying, all right, I'm going to go there and I'm not going to eat it. I'm going to go there and I'm not going to eat it. I'm going to go there and I'm not going to eat it. It's like, I don't really see it. I don't really see it. I'm engaging with the people there. And that's what we have. That's what this program has to offer us. And if you're not experiencing that, that's what true recovery means. That's what the 10-step promises mean, right? So this is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. This is really good news. This means I don't need willpower, right? And willpower is what I rely on up until this point. Little by little, we start getting infused with God's power. But in the steps, when I'm working towards it, there are times when I'm leaning into willpower. And what I found out is that it's insufficient and it will fail me. And the problem with willpower is I don't know when it's going to run out. Like all of a sudden, it's not there when I need to call upon it. So the only hope for me is to have a higher power, a connection with God. So I don't have to rely on willpower. What I like to think about it is that there was like a tiger. I think about it like a tiger. This desire to eat was a tiger that I kept trying to put in a cage. And in Overeaters Anonymous, I remember being told, well, for compulsive overeaters, it's different than alcoholics because you have to take the tiger out of the cage 3 times a day and safely get it back in. And I'm here to tell you that we have better to offer. That is not enough. Don't settle for that. Don't settle for cages, right? I really, at one time, what I was really hoping that OA could give me was a really good cage. Get me a good cage. Show me how I could take the tiger out and put the tiger back in. And what would happen for me was life was always rattling my cage. Always rattling the cage. So this tiger would be in there and things would happen. Someone would say something, someone would do something, someone would look at me, and it felt like the tiger was getting jabbed through the bars, right? With the, and then eventually I would just burst on through. This tiger, this desire would burst on through, and I would have no choice but to eat. And what happens now, what's very different now, is that it's not a tiger anymore. These 12 steps actually turn the tiger into a kitten, right? So occasionally, this little desire kind of creeps up, but it's easily able to be controlled and managed because it's not the same as it once was. So I can go places where there's food and I don't really have to call upon willpower. I've had one, and I'm going to share with you, there's been a couple of times when the desire has come back. And there are things that we can do, intensive work with others. Intensive work with others was one of the things. I was away at one time on years ago. I was away on a camping trip, and I was not. So here's the truth, right? I wasn't working with sponsees and fellows because I was away. I was away, and shouldn't I have a vacation? And I can't answer that for you. I can answer it for me. If I want to live in the world of the spirit, I have to follow the world of the spirit. I have to follow the code of the world of the spirit. My disease doesn't seem to want a vacation. In fact, it looks for a vacation. So I was away. And I wasn't working with sponsees. I was like, well, I'm away with my family. I'm camping. And something happened. Basically, my daughter did something that just got me all freaked out. And I was really worked up. And because I hadn't been calling people, because, I was slacking off a little of my prayer, my meditation, I was like getting a little, I was still weighing and measuring my food, don't you know? But all of a sudden, I got this thought of an ice cream sandwich, like out of nowhere. And it wasn't even like I saw one around, but my powers of imagination were working overtime. And I was picturing it, and I was picturing the wrapper, and I was picturing the sticky. I don't want to get too descriptive, but it felt almost pornographic. It was like so descriptive, and it was like I was undressing, an ice cream sandwich, basically. And it scared the bejesus out of me. I was like, where did this come from? Thankfully, the disciplines of this program work. Because what I did was I prayed. I prayed, I meditated, and here's the incredible thing, God answered it with my phone ringing. Someone called me looking for help while I was away, and I answered it, and I needed that help. And the desire was removed. And that's what's worked for me. So I don't take vacations, not for my program. It doesn't seem to work for me. Here's the thing, right? We can't use willpower with food, but I do use willpower in other areas. Page 85 says, it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is the subtle foe. So, what does it mean to be a subtle foe? Subtle. If something is subtle, it makes use of clever and indirect methods to achieve something, arranges in an ingenious way, and crafty and cunning, right? And foe is an enemy, right? Foe is an enemy. So, here it is, right? They're talking about food. And it sounds almost like they're personifying food. They're turning food into something that has human characteristics, right? How could food be cunning and a subtle and sneaky and an enemy? Well, if you have what I have, you know that. You know it to be true. Food does, for people like me, it does take on like human characteristics, evil human characteristics. And basically, if it's a subtle foe, it's an enemy that doesn't look like an enemy. It's sneaky. It's the wolf in sheep's clothing, right? It's the thing that I don't think is going to hurt me. And how do we protect ourselves from an enemy that doesn't even look like an enemy, right? That's frightening for us. How do we protect ourselves? Well, we don't. We don't. That's why we need to be under God's protection. That's why we need to have a higher power. Can't protect myself from a wolf in sheep's clothing. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So if I want to have protection from a wolf in sheep's clothing, my job is to maintain my spiritual connection, my connection with God, right? How do we do this? Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. So I exercise willpower in seeking God's will, right? I don't exercise willpower where food, but I use my willpower to live in agreement with God's will for me, right? And when I'm overly focused on myself, my little plans, my little designs, I can use willpower to start focusing on others, right? So when I was away on that vacation, I needed to use my willpower to work with other people, even though I was away, right? That was the truth for me. When I want to play God, I can use my willpower to knock it off, right? I can like say, okay, this is your willpower trying to make an appearance. Use that willpower to stop trying to control other people. I can use willpower to pray. I can use my willpower to meditate. I can use willpower to call on a fellow when I'm upset. I can use willpower to stay away from gossip and negativity. If I seek God, then I'm safe and protected. And I can use my willpower to seek God. Page 85 says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. So I love this because I have a dear friend in OA. She's a nun and she's in her 80s. And years ago, she shared with me that the 12 steps helped her come to have a relationship with God that she never had before. And that just makes me smile and laugh because here she is a nun. She's been a nun her whole life. And she said, actually, Overeaters Anonymous helped her find God, right? And she'd been a nun all that time, but she found God here. And she once referred to God as Sid. And I just love this strength, inspiration, and direction. It just makes me smile. If we've carefully followed directions, we've begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. And to some extent, we have become God conscious. And I love that. Awoken to God, God conscious. I get waken up to the God that has, that fundamental idea has been inside me all along. And now I get woken up and I'm like, whoa, there it is. It's right there. We've begun to develop this vital sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. So step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer, right? Better men than us are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Okay, so what do they mean by the proper attitude for effective prayer and meditation? Well, I say it's an attitude of open-mindedness and a craving for God, right? That's the attitude I have to have. Basically, I'm a woman who must have a miracle, right? I share that all the time. And nothing else is going to save me. If I have the attitude that I need a miracle, I will pray because my life depends on it. Nothing I'm asked to do will seem like too much if I know I need a miracle. But here's another miraculous transformation that happens here. I don't just do these things anymore because I'm afraid I'm going to eat again. That's not why I pray anymore. It's not why I meditate anymore. I do those things because I want to, because I want to pray, because I want to meditate. I crave living this way. I want to feel the nearness of my Creator. Prayer and meditation is my spiritual nourishment, right? And in the AA 12 and 12, it says, page 97, those of us who make regular use of prayer, which is why I say if you're just going to start praying at step 11, you got a long way to catch up. I tell people right from the beginning, start praying. Before you do any step work, before you do anything, start with prayer because we want to make regular use of it. And those of us who would make regular use of it would no more do without it than we would refuse air, food, or sunshine. And for the same reason, when we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. And I just love that. It's right in the AA 12 and 12 on page 97. I'm going to take a sip. My step 11 practice for me is related to my step two, coming to believe. It's very much related. And the attitude is like a childlike faith that was talked about in the explanation of the Wright brothers. And it's further discussed in the appendix in the spiritual experience. It says on page 568 that there's a principle, which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments. and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. So I cannot grow spiritually if I have contempt prior to investigating. Basically, I say it like this: I have to stop being so damn cool. I can't think it's beneath my consideration to pray and meditate and seek God. You know, I did. I used to think that I was too good for that, which is insane. Right? I was a woman over 300 pounds. I couldn't stop eating, but this God thing was beneath my consideration at one time. You know, I can't think I'm too good for God and then expect to receive strength, inspiration, and direction. Right? So here we're told what to do at night on page 86. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Right? Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So, you know, there's many ways this really is referring to how we review our day. And there's many ways that people do this nightly review. Some participate in 11-step trains, some share it with a sponsor or a partner, you know, like a recovery partner. You know, many people like the OA Toolkit app. I would say that a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient, so is my nightly inventory. Shouldn't be done alone. I'm not a fan of doing anything in this program independent. This is not an independent study, right? This is a we fellowship. We're supposed to do this in conjunction with others. My review helps me cooperate with the removal of my defects. It helps me to continue, improve, and progress. It encourages me to do better, to seek God's will, and to live in agreement with the divine. That's really the purpose. So what I do is, you know, I look at my inventory, I look at my nightly review, and I see the areas that I fell short on, and I see the areas that I did well on. And I ask God for more of what I did well on and less of what I didn't do so well on. And I basically ask God to direct me, help me, right? Second paragraph on page 86, to the bottom of 87, describes our morning prayer and meditation time. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So I think what's significant about that is that I consider my plans for the day. Like, I don't just create these plans and like they're etched in stone and I'll be damned if they don't happen, right? That was like me running bulldozer everybody. Like, I made a plan of the day and God help you if you didn't follow my plan, right? And then I would curse God if God didn't follow my plan for the day, right? And here's what happens is I just consider it. I consider it. I don't create the plan when I'm considering what I'm going to be doing. I'm thinking about others and how it's going to impact them, right? Because that's my role now, to think about other people. Page 86 says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. So these are very helpful directions when I don't know what to do, right? And that happens to me a lot. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know whether to do this or whether to do that. And I can make myself crazy over the smallest decisions. Like, truly, I can go nuts over something which is ridiculous in hindsight, right? So what do? I ask God for inspiration. I ask God for a thought that comes clearly from God. It's a thought that doesn't sound like anything I could have thought up myself. And it's an idea that's often creative, you know? Inspiration has another meaning too. Inspiration means the drawing of a breath, inhalation. And we all know that that breath is not something we're in control of, right? We only think we are, right? We can manipulate our breathing, but we're really not even in control of our breath because, you know, one of the things is, right? Okay, so don't breathe, right? Hold your breath. You know what happens, right? You pass out. And from what I was told, the first thing you do when you pass out is you take in a deep breath if you can. So we only think that we're in control. Basically, I need inspiration. I need God's breath in my decisions. Now, here's the other thing I need to do. I need intuitive. Understanding something immediately without the need for conscious reasoning. Basically, it's a thought that seems instinctive, as though it came from within me, like right from within my DNA, as though it was something I was just born knowing. I ask God, okay, breathe into me, tell me what to do, and then make me think that I thought it up myself, right? That's really what I'm asking for, you know? And if I don't feel inspired or intuitive, then I'm told what to do. Relax, right? Take it easy. Don't struggle. I don't force myself to decide, and I no longer make too many hasty decisions. If I have to make an immediate choice or miss out on something because I didn't decide right away and I couldn't decide right away, then for me, the choice to not do it actually wound up being the choice. Miss out, right? If I'm told, well, if you don't let me know right away, you can't do it, and I don't know if I'm supposed to do it, then I guess I'm not going to do it, right? And sometimes it looks like you're just sort of like not doing anything. Well, I don't want to have to apologize for making mistakes, right? You know, we're often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration, it gradually becomes a working part of the mind. So as my recovery progresses, I find that my decision-making skills progress too. I seem to just know what I should do more and more. I get this sense inside me when it just doesn't feel right. You know, I just seem to know more and more, but I'm still inexperienced, right? So we're told being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. And nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. So since I am just learning this, it is crucial that I have a sponsor, you know, as well as a recovered fellowship to bounce some of my ideas off. You know, I've learned that going it alone is dangerous, right? If I'm the only one making the decisions, then it's only me that's making those decisions, right? I need other people involved. Page 87, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all throughout the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. So I don't ask God anymore for a life free of problems, but I ask God to open my eyes so I can recognize the resources he gives me to take care of my problems, right? We don't get a life free of problems. You know, it's to me, it's kind of like that old request, not for the fish, for the hungry man, but for the fishing pole, right? And the knowledge of how to fish. So I ask specifically for freedom from self-will. And I'm careful not to make any requests for myself only. You know, and this is where my third step prayer comes in perfectly. I ask, right, so that I can be useful to other people. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We're careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. Why are we warned about praying for ourselves? Because we don't have the whole picture. I don't have the whole picture. I don't have all the information. And I can't possibly know what's best for myself or for others because all I have is my very narrow perspective. So it's best not for me to ask for things I know nothing about. And page 87 near the bottom of the page says, nothing in this book, by the way, is telling you to abandon your religion. We're told to attend to our religious prayers. We're also reminded to go to our priest, our minister, our rabbis. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they have to offer. And I would say it's very important, it's especially important never to criticize another fellow's religion, you know, or ask a sponsee to break any religious laws. And I think sometimes we have to be careful sometimes telling our own stories if we've had negative experiences with the religion that we've grown up with, to be very careful not to talk poorly about that religion because we're told. You know, other people are finding their faith and strength there. You know, and I would never tell anybody, any sponsor, anybody to break their religious laws. We're supposed to cooperate with people's religion. You know, and again, we're told what to do when we're annoyed or unsure. We pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, Thy will be done. If we do this, then here's what we get. Here's what we get. Less danger of excitement, less fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. Remember that idea that my time, I get better at managing my time. When you're more efficient, you manage time better. You don't tire so easily. I'm not so easily upset. I think back to when I discussed tolerance as diminished sensitivity. Well, if I pause, go to God, and let go of outcomes, then I'm not so sensitive. I can be that little sailboat they say in a storm. Either when the storm is blowing, I can either let out some rope, right, and give the world some slack, right? Or I can actually just let down my sail altogether, right? In a big storm, a sailboat just lets down its sails, puts down the mast. And I stop getting focused, you know, and tossed around by the wind. I have greater ability to detach and to see things as just happening and not from the lens as though it's happening to me, right? From that self-centered lens. Here's one of the best lines of all. Ready? It works. It really does. This process works. This is the 11th step promise. We get a relationship with power, and this is what keeps us safe from the subtle foe. We have that personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from compulsive eating. And with that, I will pass.